I'm Dan Erlander, and I'm serving from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I'm serving this year at Holden as a village pastor. And when I was examined for ordination, went through all of these questions about my orthodoxy and whether or not I was a true Lutheran, and I passed everything except at the end they said, everything you believe is okay, everything you say is okay, but nobody will ever hear you. When I start phasing out in the back there, just raise your hand. My first assignment is kind of a joke, but it's also serious, but I'm going to write the name of the book we're going to study on the blackboard. And when I taught a course in my home congregation on the book of Revelation, and after all the time, we had one final examination. And you never have finals in adult education in the church because then nobody will come. But this one was very easy. I put two words on the board and then put Revelation and Revelations. And then their final examination was to tell me whether the book we're studying is Revelation or Revelations. Does anybody know the answer? It's Revelation, and that's a little, we might as well start with something kind of nitpicky, but often when somebody talks about this book, they call it the Book of Revelations, and just as a little personal crusade, I don't have, high goals. After five sessions, if you call it Revelation instead of Revelations, I'm happy. Well, the other thing, we studied the book of Revelations. We studied Revelation in the winter program, and what we did is we spent almost like the first two sessions on an introduction. On how to interpret the Bible, all the different ways the book of Revelation has been interpreted, right ways and wrong ways. And it was a long time before we really kind of plunged into the book. So what I'm going to change that a little for this time and do a little introduction, plunge into the book. And then as we go, I hope you'll pick up the method of interpretation that we're using here. And then also as we go along, I want to, I'll bring out how we're interpreting it and how this differs from probably the most popular way it is interpreted. Another normal way to start a study of the book of Revelation is to say something about Hal Lindsey. So I won't disappoint anybody, I will. I'm just curious how many have read Hal Lindsey's book. Forgot the name of it. The Late Great Planet Earth. Now, I have it in the comic book. It's called There's a New World Coming by Hal Lindsey. And what I'm not going to say a lot about how Hal Lindsey interprets the book of Revelation, but as we go into the book, I hope it will become obvious for you how this differs. And if you like to look at this comic book, it's one of my favorites because it tells you the position you should take in the rapture. It has pictures, they're all white people, only white people are in the rapture. And they're all beautiful and they're all teenagers. And the position you take is really to pull your chest out and your feet back as you fly up. Well, that's all I'm saying. If anybody would like to see this. I won't say any more about that. We'll plunge right in. Another danger, sometimes in studying the Bible, I'm convinced and concerned that before we interpret the Bible for ourselves, we understand its history. We understand the people it was written to, the person who wrote it, their life, and their situation. And I have a tendency sometimes to spend almost too much time and never get to what it means to us. And Marv and I were we were laughing about this because Marva was here teaching the Bible. She plunged right into what it means for us, and it was on the book of Corinthians. And I told her afterwards, if I were teaching, I would have spent the first 3 hours discussing the engineering of the Corinthian canal and how they pulled the bolts across the peninsula at Corinth over the logs, how they set the logs up to the boat, and how that influenced the book of Corinthians. So what I'm going to start with where we're going to end and then go back and start. And this is where we're going to end up, and how we'll the point of the book of Revelation, and then move to what that means to us or how we apply that to us. The book of Revelation was a simple call to a commitment between two conflicting claims of deity. Christ or Domitian. The whole book, you could almost say, if you worship Jesus Christ, this is what it means. If you worship the Emperor Domitian, this is what it means. And as we end our brief look into the book of Revelation, if this word has become word of God to us, it will be when we take the book of Revelation and do this with our blank, fill in our blank that would take the place of Domitian for us, and then ask ourselves as individuals and as a church, what is our Domitian? And then at that point, the book of Revelation is speaking to us and calling us to question. Another way to say it is the book of Revelation is above all a book about worship. It's a book of worship. It's about worship. If you read the first chapter, it was written on Sunday, on the Lord's Day. John was dreaming about the Eucharist. It's a book about worship, and if you look in our liturgy, how much of it comes from the book of Revelation. And it's no trouble to see how this fits. Is the question of Christ or Domitian is ultimately a question of worship. And then as the Word of God comes to us, it becomes ultimately a question of worship for us. Okay, I'm going to tell you in a minute. He was a Roman emperor at the time the book was written. Book of Revelation was written. If you don't like surprises, I'll just keep telling you where we're going to end up. The Vespers last night, when we said, what did we say in that little litany already?
Let God be God.
Let God be God. What we confessed last night in that prayer is the confession and the plea of the book of Revelation. What I'm hoping you're seeing already is a difference between this and the way of interpreting the book of Revelation is that I can come here, study the book of Revelation, and then I can get a secret plan on how the future is going to take place. And to me, that is the, I think we get this from Luther, that the easiest and the best and the most effective way of escaping the Bible is the Bible. Or the most effective way of escaping God is religion. You ever thought about that? And what happens when we go into the book of Revelation with the idea, I'm going to find the secret plan so I know the future, then it builds up my self-pride that I know something you don't know, ha ha ha. I know the future. And if you go back to the story of Adam and Eve, maybe that's very close to the fall. So if you came here and were hoping in five sessions that you would get a true interpretation of what's happening in Iran now, or what the common market really means, or what the Russians are doing, you will be very, very disappointed. But I think what you will see in its place in these next sessions will be even more exciting. In fact, besides my goal of having you call it the Book of Revelation, the other goal would just be to see what John is really saying is so much more exciting than everything we hear on the radio about the Book of Revelation, that will just look very, very boring. And so that would be my higher goal, that when you hear, that I'm going to try as much as I can, and I never get real excited. I never look excited. I'm Swedish. but I'll still set this as a goal, that this will be so exciting that people that present it in much more, present it the other way in a much more exciting way that I will than I present it will look boring. Is that a bad? What I want to just really move right into now, and I apologize, this chart here is probably, if you're in the back, you probably cannot see it that well. So I will point where things are, then welcome to come up afterwards. This same chart that I'm going to show now is, I have it printed in much more detail in the two pages that you tape together. And what it is, it's a chart of the New Testament era. And what I'll try to do by tomorrow is get this in the bookstore, and since it was printed here at the Village, sell it for like a dime or something. Or we'll decide. Might be 15 cents. We'll sell it for that, and then if you'd like a copy of it, then you can pick it up. Well, where I want to start now is to show the background of the Book of Revelation. And then later in our session, which we end by 10, is that right? This session. I want to just move right into chapter 13 of the Book of Revelation, because in chapter 13, first we'll go into a little background from the Book of Daniel, then into chapter 13, because in that chapter we get what is a historical situation of the book. But first we'll put it in the context of its history, and then where and how this type of literature that we call apocalyptic literature developed. Also, it's a perfect moving from Joe's Bible study yesterday. Because you're going to see how apocalyptic literature, that we'll explain what is really literature of an oppressed people. And the reason we have so many false interpretations, I think, of the Book of Revelation is simply we're not oppressed and we're not persecuted. So that's, you'll see, I think, as we go on how that flows. Before the Book of Revelation is way up here on the chart. Before we move there, we have to go way back I'm starting way back here about the fall of Jerusalem in 586, when the people of the southern kingdom went off into the Babylonian captivity. 538, that's when the Persians defeated the Babylonians. If you want to tie this to modern history, the Persian Empire is today Iran. Ruled the world, and at that time the Jewish people returned to their homeland. Then in 333, Alexander the Great conquered Jerusalem by defeating the Persians. And you have to think of Alexander the Great of not only being a military conqueror, but also a cultural missionary. And to get the background of the type of literature we're going to be talking about is to understand the Greek conquest of the world as being both a military conquest and a cultural conquest. Wherever Alexander the Great went, it was not only to conquer the land, but also to introduce Greek ways, Greek gods, Greek philosophy, Greek learning, Greek sports, Greek gymnasium, and to build Greek cities, to bring Greek men from Greece to parts of the world to establish Greek culture, and they then would be the missionaries of Greek culture. Now, when Alexander the Great conquered Jerusalem, he allowed the Jewish people to continue in their worship of Yahweh. And there's one legend that when he conquered Jerusalem, he was so impressed by the magnificence of the temple and the temple cult that he was so awestruck by it that he allowed the Jewish people to continue. Now, when Alexander the Great died, his kingdom was divided among his generals, and they fought back and forth to hold different parts of the Greek kingdom. Palestine, by 198, we're now entering the phase called really the intertestamental period, that kind of blank period where the Old Testament almost ends and the New Testament begins. And one of the families from the division of Alexander's kingdom, they took control of Jerusalem. They were called the Seleucids. And there were a number of rulers now, and they were called Antiochus. So you had Antiochus I, Antiochus II, Antiochus III, Antiochus IV. Then Antiochus IV was called Antiochus Epiphanes. Now his name in itself gives us an indication of the spirit in which he ruled. All of the previous Antiochuses were allowed the Jewish people to remain faithful to their worship of Yahweh and the temple cult and the law. But Antiochus Epiphanes, what, if you remember from the church calendar, the season of Epiphany, what does Epiphany mean?
Manifestation.
Right, manifestation. So you have here a person who... What we're going to see is several people like this that have such a weak ego that being God is very important. as our story ended up in Vespers last night, and took the name Epiphanes just to remind everybody, I'm a manifestation of God. And now, part of his dreams of empire was to unite all the people where he ruled into one religion, and he would be the god. Not a bad setup. And what you're going to notice through here is how those who want to control people find the best tool for the control of those people, religion. Okay, now this is nothing new. Is it today? Right now I usually go into how when President Park was in South Korea before he was killed, how he loved American evangelists to come over there and save people. You know, and we would sit back and say, isn't that wonderful? President Park is interested in real Christianizing South Korea. And I won't go into it anymore, but the more you study that, you see that it's very close. You know, that religion is one of the best tools of an oppressive dictator. And because if he could have the people all believing one religion, and if he was involved in that, he could maintain his power. And so now in the area where he ruled, which was Palestine, Antiochus Epiphanes, the biggest threat... Nobody else had trouble accepting him really as God, because this type of divinity was extremely tolerant. You could keep all your own ways and your own gods as long as you added him. You know, really, it was beautiful tolerance. One problem he had were the Jews. who absolutely refused to recognize him as divinity. And so Antiochus Epiphanes began what in Jewish history is called the Great Persecution. The Great Persecution was a Hitler-type attempt. I think many Jews might say that Antiochus Epiphanes and Hitler are almost two of a kind, because they both had the same program, and that is to wipe out the Jews. And now he had a little different way of doing it, because Hitler wanted to wipe out the Jews by simply killing all Jews. Antiochus Epiphanes was more concerned about wiping out Judaism. So anyone who would give up Judaism and recognize Antiochus Epiphanes as God, that person's life would be saved. And now the torture at this time was just sadistic. First of all, he desecrated the temple in Jerusalem. He offered a pig on the altar in the temple of Jerusalem. He put up a statue of Zeus in the temple of Jerusalem. This is the desecration, or what does it say in the Gospels? Jesus says, when you see the abomination of the desolation spoken of in the book of Daniel. This was the act of Antiochus, to set up the statue of Zeus and to offer a pig in the temple in Jerusalem. Any Jewish person, Jewish books or the Torah scrolls were burned. Any Jew caught reading the Torah was killed. Any family, babies were examined, and if a family had a son circumcised, that baby was killed, the father was killed, and for a two-week period, the dead baby would be hung around the neck of the mother, and the Jewish mothers had to walk around with their dead babies. Antiochus stopped with nothing to wipe out Jewish religion. Hey, now, how does a people that are oppressed by this persecution respond? Okay, now the faithful, and they were called the pious. They're called the pious. How can we encourage each other to be faithful to Yahweh at this time of horrendous persecution and torture and death? Okay, the one way you could not do it is get up on a stump and start preaching to people talking to people like I'm doing here. Because it simply would mean the minute you start talking, you lose your life. How can we get the message across to plead with people to remain faithful to Yahweh at this time of persecution? And at times of persecution are often the most creative times. And what these people did during the great persecution of Antiochus was develop a whole new form of literature. And that form of literature was called apocalyptic. Apocalyptic literature. The word means the word means revealing. And the closest thing to the meaning of the word apocalyptic was last night when we revealed the new banner. That was an apocalypse, as that banner fell down, because we had never seen it before. And all of a sudden, the organ played, it fell, and there it was. Apocalypse. Okay, is everybody, that might be on the final. Remember that? Where did apocalyptic literature come? And now what we're talking about, where we're moving, is Revelation is apocalyptic literature. It's a literary style, it's a form of story. It was a combination of the Old Testament prophets who talked about the lordship of Yahweh and the judgment of Yahweh in history and the coming day of Yahweh in history. Then they combined it with what they had learned in the Babylonian captivity. They had learned from the Persians, and that was Persian ideas about darkness, and also Babylonian ideas about the dualism of darkness and light. And then they combined these two ideas in what became apocalyptic literature. something else on that page. Can't find it, so fine. Oh yeah, the other besides the dualism was also the understanding of the final resurrection of the dead. This came from Persian influence. So apocalypse and also all the strange symbolism of beasts and dragons and second beasts and everything. They combine these two forms of literature into a new form of literature called apocalyptic literature. Okay, now the best way to understand what apocalyptic literature was is the concept of the underground newspaper. And did anybody read an underground newspaper during the 60s? How would you define an underground newspaper?
Revolutionary.
Yeah, it was revolutionary in that it had a message that opposed the established system. Possibly another characteristic was that you almost had to be initiated to really understand what it was saying. Do you think I'm probably right? But that's why I've really used that word to explain Daniel and Revelation. And what you do now is you get all of these strange pictures, code language, code numbers, code names, weird beasts and weird animals, and the oppressor has no idea what you're talking about. In fact, the crazier the better. Okay, the reason we have trouble understanding, if you've ever worried that you do not understand the book of Daniel or the book of Revelation, that's exactly the intent of the authors. Okay, so relax. They don't want you to understand. If you're outside of this small group of people who are suffering persecution. Because the crazier it sounds, the less censorship. Do you see the relationship? Especially if you can come off as a kook, or just a crazy person that is having weird dreams, because we know even in our world today, the first thing that happens when there's an oppressive government is censorship of the press, or censorship of writing, censorship of creativity. And even under government today, if you write just weird fairy tales, you know, the censors are going to just pass them by. They saw the pious preachers at the time of Antiochus Epiphanes could write these strange sayings and also the stories in the book of Daniel. And what they said to the Jewish people who understood the code language was keep the faith. Because God is going to win in the end, the victory in the future in the hands of God. So just hang on there. Because the final victory is with God. Okay, now, so the book of Daniel comes from about the time 165. And one of the things that really fools us about the book of Daniel, and this is kind of a joke on us, but the story is like the story of Daniel, or the context of the stories are in the Babylonian empire. The king of Babylon was Nebuchadnezzar. I was wondering that for a middle name. So today you have this tremendous argument going on about the book of Daniel, where some will accuse those who say the book was written in 165 as being modernists, because we're not taking the stories literally as they happened in the time of the Babylonian captivity. The writers wanted you to think that because the censors would say, well, fine, writing these stories about old days in Babylon. But the Jews knew when the writer talked about somebody in Babylon, all they had to do is take out that name, put in the name Antiochus Epiphanes, and they knew exactly what the book of Daniel was about. Okay, before we end today, we'll look at one passage in the book of Daniel to see how this works. But now, Let's move now into the New Testament era. And in the New Testament era, all of this, we won't take time to go over, but in 63, Rome now conquers Palestine. Pompey's takes Jerusalem in the year 63 AD. By the way, this was after the victory of Judas Maccabees, and this was a time when the Jewish resistance defeated the Greeks or the Seleucids, and that's when you had the rededication of the temple and the Jewish feast of, Hanukkah, comes from the victory over Antiochus Epiphanes, and Palestine, the Jewish people in Palestine had their own government here for a while. When Pompey took Jerusalem in 63, it was the last time the Jewish people ruled their own homeland until 1948. Under Rome now, we want to move through these emperors very quickly. Augustus, Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, Nero, Vespasian, Titus, and Domitian. And that takes us up to the book of Revelation. Did any see I, Claudius, on television? If you saw that, you'd have the perfect background for what we're talking about. Now, what we have to understand now before we understand the book of Revelation, because where we're moving now will be to the time of Domitian, where you had another great persecution. And I'm always like to get ahead, but what the book of Revelation then will do is go back, pick up the apocalyptic literature from Daniel, move it up to here, and use it again for the very same purpose. Now I'll show you how that works. And then to really see how that works, we'll move into Revelation 13. Augustus, Emperor Augustus, from 27 BC to 14 AD, he had the title of Prince of Peace. Have you ever heard this? What time of the year do we hear this? Okay, Christmas. Who was the Roman Emperor when Jesus was born? Augustus. A decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be enrolled. And the amazing politics, the New Testament is filled with first century politics. Anybody who says that religion and politics don't mix has not read the New Testament. Luke knew what he was doing when he put the words in the mouth of the angels, glory to God in the highest and on earth peace. He was making a political protest statement that everyone called Augustus the Prince of Peace. And in this book of Luke, we are calling Jesus the Prince of Peace. Is that political? I don't think you can deny that's a political statement. Why was Augustus called the Prince of Peace? Because the Roman world had tremendous civil wars before this time, family against family, all the bitterness of the American Civil War. And during this time, there was literature that dreamed of a coming person that would establish peace on earth. And when Augustus set up the Pax Romana, the Roman peace, here was the predicted Prince of Peace. And Luke says no. Now, Augustus, however, did not practice emperor worship. He allowed it in the eastern provinces because people there had always done it. And so let them do it. But he did not allow emperor worship in the western part of the empire. It was at the time of Tiberius, largely because people wanted it. Emperor worship was a grassroots movement. and we can talk about the relevancy of that today. Is idolatry ever forced on us from above, or is idolatry a grassroots movement? And so, starting with Tiberius, and this is important now when we get to Revelation 13, emperor worship grows and becomes more dominant. Now, you can really trace the psychological security of each Roman Empire and that, how that relates to how seriously that emperor took emperor worship. For example, Tiberius laughed about it. You know, when he became emperor, I think I remember this right, when he became emperor, he just says, well, I guess I'm a god. And it was kind of a joke, but everybody was saying it, so it was kind of, I'll go along with it. If you saw I, Claudius, you know that Caligula was simply a, I don't know what word to use, creep or nerd or something. I don't like to use words like that. And so he took emperor worship seriously because he took himself seriously. Maybe we could talk. We could talk about that with ourselves. And then Claudius, Nero, Vespasian, Titus, and Domitian. And I want to give a little background here. Up until this time, the Roman world, until the time of Nero, really didn't know that Christians existed. At the time of Claudius, we have one statement that he was sick and tired of the Jewish people in Rome fighting over someone called Christos. And Emperor Claudius was so unaware of Christianity that he thought that was somebody that was running around the Jewish neighborhood in Rome. So this was how prevalent Christianity was in the minds of the Roman Empire. By the time of Nero, Christianity was more public. People knew more about it. And there was hatred growing among the population against Christians. So when one third of the city of Rome burned in the year 64, Nero blamed the Christians, and this was the first persecution, and probably Peter and Paul were executed at this time. After Nero committed suicide, there was a terrible civil war for about a year, and it is at that time that the generals of the Jewish wars from 66 to 73, that family, the Flavians, then established a dynasty that went from 69 to 96, and it's in the context now of the Flavian dynasty that we have the book of Revelation. Now, I want to just tell one story about Domitian, the emperor, and that will help you understand what kind of a person he was. Vespasian was a father, Titus and Domitian are brothers. And anything that happened in their family, Titus got the credit, and Domitian was forgotten in the early childhood. Also, Titus was good-looking, popular, well-liked, and some have said he was almost like a John F. Kennedy figure. Even when he became emperor, he was good-looking and popular and well-liked. And then at the time when there was the three-day parade through the streets of Rome at the end of the Jewish wars, Vespasian and Titus rode in the parade in chariots, and then way at the end of the parade they had Domitian riding a horse. It was just kind of a plan to make him feel inadequate. You know, what this meant was by the time when Domitian became emperor, and probably became emperor by simply killing Titus, then Domitian, here with his terribly weak ego, takes his divinity extremely seriously and enforces emperor worship. Now, emperor worship was very simple. By the way, just like Augustus had a name, Prince of Peace, Domitian also had a name that he took for himself, It was a very humble name, Lord and God. And all you had to do when you met Domitian was address him as my Lord and my God. And I'll listen to this powerful political statement in the book of John. And I have when all the New Testament books were probably written, so you can kind of go up and see what was happening in the world. If you buy this chart for a dime. Or you can have it free by just looking up here. John was written right after the time of Domitian. When in the resurrection story, when Thomas kneeled before the risen Jesus and Jesus offered to have Thomas put his finger in the nails in his hands and his hand in his side, what did Thomas say to the risen Jesus? My Lord and my God. Okay, we've read that all our life, but the first readers knew exactly what was being said, that this was a political statement about whom we worship. That the risen Jesus claims now the title for us that was claimed by Domitian, my Lord and my God. Never been able to read that resurrection story in John again after hearing that without just being excited about the impact of that one old statement as Thomas kneels before the risen Christ and does what millions had done throughout the reign of Domitian, says my Lord and my God. I get all excited. While Domitian took the title for himself, my Lord and my God, the writer of the book of Revelation had another title for him that was not quite as complimentary. It simply called him the Beast. And that'll move us up. Let's move into Revelation 13. What I'd like to encourage as we read, you read the book of Revelation as an artist. You have to take your kind of rational, Greek, scientific, educated, scholarly mind, just kind of pretend like you're picking up, taking up, and setting it aside, and then off another shelf, take up a Jewish mind that is artistic, is poetic, sees things, truth, in picture language, and put that in your brain. And with someone who just really likes to read in church, would someone just stand up and read the whole chapter of Revelation 13? And I like to close my eyes when Revelation is being read. And the best way to read the book of Revelation, I've been told, and I want to try it sometime, is to go to a Greek Orthodox church while the liturgy is going on, which you won't understand anyway. Get as much incense going past you as possible, and then just sit there and read the book of Revelation. That's the only, I really think sometimes I'm going to bring a class to the back of the Greek Orthodox Church and we'll just sit there and read. So if you'd want to just close your eyes and see the pictures, could someone read the chapter? I probably scared you that you didn't be a good reader.
I'll read it.
Okay, good.
And I saw a beast coming out of the sea. He had 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 crowns on his horns, and on each head a blasphemous name. The beast I saw resembled a leopard, but had feet like those of a bear and a mouth like that of a lion. The dragon gave the beast his power and his throne and great authority. One of the heads of the beast seemed to have had a fatal wound, but the fatal wound had been healed. The whole world was astonished and followed the beast. Men worshiped the dragon because he had given authority to the beast, and they also worshiped the beast and asked, "Who is like the beast? Who can make war against him?" The beast was given a mouth to utter proud words and blasphemies and to exercise his authority for 42 months. He opened his mouth to blaspheme God and to slander his name and his dwelling place and those who live in heaven. He was given power to make war against the saints and to conquer them, and he was given authority over every tribe, people, language, and nation. All inhabitants of the earth will worship the beast, all whose names have not been written in the book of life, belonging to the Lamb that was slain from the creation of the world. He who has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is to go into captivity he will go. If anyone is to be killed with the sword he will be killed. This calls for patient endurance and faithfulness on the part of the saints. Then I saw another beast coming out of the earth. He had two horns like a lamb, but he spoke like a dragon. He exercised all the authority of the first beast on his behalf and made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, whose fatal wound had been healed. And he performed great and miraculous signs, even causing fire to come down from heaven to earth in full view of men. Because of the signs he was given power to do on behalf of the first beast, he deceived the inhabitants of the earth. He ordered them to set up an image in honor of the beast who was wounded by the sword and yet lived. He was given power to give breath to the image of the first beast, so that it could speak and cause all who refused to worship the image to be killed. He also forced everyone, small and great, rich and poor, slave and free, to receive a mark on his right hand or on his forehead, so that no one could buy or sell unless he had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of his name. This calls for wisdom. If anyone has insight, let him calculate the number of the beast, for it is man's number. His number is 666.
I closed my eyes during reading all kinds of visions. I hope you felt some of the same. So powerful. It's hard to start. I guess I'd ask, from what we've said so far, did you see anything that this might have meant to the early Christians? Did you already catch any of the symbolism? What would an example be? Would you guess who the beast is? I already told you that. Okay, then we have the second beast, and then we have a dragon. And now what, this is just a little side insight, but what John does all through the book of Revelation is set up how the kingdom of darkness has parallels to the kingdom of God. So you have the dragon, beast one, and beast two, that are parallels of the Trinity, God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit. The dragon in the book of Revelation will be Satan, or the ruler of darkness. The first beast, what I'm going to be saying here is the best guesses of commentators, and some of them are clear, like there'd be very little question about who the first beast is. That's Domitian. Others, like the meaning of the number 666, there's some argument about what it might mean. Okay, very similar now to the time of Daniel, the great persecution. The book of Revelation is written to Christians in what is today Turkey, or at that time Asia Minor. And there were about the best guess of scholars is that about this time there were approximately 320,000 Christians in the world. I say this because we love church statistics. Often asked, how big is your church? And your answer, do you mean baptized, confirmed, or adult? There are 320,000 Christians. About 80,000 of these live, 80,000 Christians lived in this kind of western part of what is today Turkey. And it was here that the persecution and the torture and the death was intense. And many, many Christians were leaving the church. And so now John, who has been a leader in one of the churches, exiled on this island of Patmos. This is where luxury tour boats now float in on the Greek Isles as you overeat. And you can stop at Patmos. And next time I'm going to have some slides of Patmos because we've done that. Then tomorrow I'll show you some slides. But now John is on a prison island. And as the leader of the church, how can I get the word to these people to stay faithful to Jesus at this time of persecution? Okay, he pulls apocalyptic literature from the book of Daniel and other sources, knowing that the Roman people that are ruling or that are the prison guards and administrators on the island will have no idea what it's all about. He changes the code language to reflect the Roman Empire. The Christians, before their baptism, had to be thoroughly schooled in Jewish understanding and Jewish literature as part of becoming a Christian. You didn't have to become a Jew, that question was settled, but you had to learn Jewish literature, the Old Testament literature, including apocalyptic literature. They knew this language, so he would write these weird things about dragons and beasts coming out of the sea. Prison guards, probably the censors, would look at them and laugh at this quaint old man writing this weird stuff. So it would get to the churches, and there it would be read, and they would know exactly what it meant. And it meant this, and this is the theme over and over in the book of Revelation. Domitian is soon through. This persecution is temporary. Domitian is temporary. Everything is temporary except Jesus Christ. Hang on. Keep the faith. Keep the faith. Okay, now let's look at some of these images that are fun. In chapter 13, okay, the beast emerging from the sea is Domitian. Okay, seven heads and ten horns. The code language here is fairly simple. Who are the emperors that have been emperors at the time when emperor worship has been practiced? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, 7. Okay, then why does he add 10? Just so you'll really get the picture, during the Civil War, there were three Roman emperors then that reigned for like 1 month each before they were killed in the war. So just to make sure it's clear, it's either seven heads or if you want to add, so nobody says, well, you're wrong, there are 10. He says, okay, if you want to look at it that way, 10 horns. On their heads were marked blasphemous titles. And now the people know we're talking about emperors who demand worship. And then the leopard, the bear, and the lion. These are images now that come from the book of Daniel. We're running out of time. If you want to look at that on your own, it's Daniel 7. 1 through 9. They prostrated themselves in front of the beast, saying, who can compare with the beast? Here we have emperor worship. How could anybody defeat him? And now what the Roman world is just worships, the worship of the emperor was really just, it was a symbol of a deeper worship, and that was the worship of military power. The way of peace is a way of a strong military power. This is the way of peace. And if you want to put any relevance to that for today, I'll leave that up to you. Okay, and everybody is worshiping the power that is represented by the Roman emperor. Okay, it's time. So what we'll do tomorrow, I want to say just one thing, if you allow me, it'll take 3 minutes, because if you read this on your own at home, it adds so much. And then what we'll do is we'll pick up tomorrow in the middle of verse 3, chapter 13. But how did emperor worship happen? And I'll have a slide tomorrow about where emperor worship happened. It took almost no effort for a Christian to worship the emperor. It took, my guess, and this is my guess, is that it took 1 hour and 5 minutes a year. And as all in all bureaucracies, it took 1 hour to stand in line and then 5 minutes to do it. And simply, you'd get in line once a year and you'd go past the desk of the bureaucrats. Okay, now the second beats are the bureaucrats who enforce emperor worship. They're the people that sit at the desk. I'm using some of my imagination here, but I think it's close to what I studied. Okay, there they give you a card that you put in your wallet. And all oppressive governments have cards. This is nothing new. Read about South Africa. You got to have your papers. Okay, so what we even have from an archaeology, what it says on one of these cards. I lost it. I'll give it to you tomorrow. But what you do then is, after you register here, you take a pinch of incense, and here's a statue of Domitian. You put that pinch of incense before the statue of Domitian, light it, and you say 3 words. Caesar is Lord. And then you have your card and you walk away. Okay. Now, probably the mark of the beast is your card in your wallet. It says anyone who did not have the mark of the beast didn't even get a job. You had to show this card at the employment line. The mark of the beast. It was so simple, it took so little time. And they even said, after you do this, you can still worship Jesus. You can still worship Jesus. Just, it only takes 5 minutes a year. And the book of Revelation now is written to say no to this 5 minutes a year. And to say the first Christian creed was the exact thing you said before the statue of Domitian, except you changed one word. One word you changed. Instead of Caesar is Lord, it was what?
Jesus.
Jesus. Let's say it together.
Jesus is Lord.